Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Emily Dishbecker, who is a Beirut-based freelance writer and editor who has worked for Harper's Magazine, Der Spiegel, Die Zeit, and Al Akbar English, among other publications. Welcome to Background Briefing, Emily Dishbecker.
Thank you.
And this car bomb that went off in the Shiite neighborhoods of Beirut, of course, has echoes of a bomb that went off many years ago that was aimed at the head of Hezbollah, Sheikh Nasrallah, and this bomb apparently went off pretty much in that same area. Is this a portent of things to come in terms of the sectarian nature of this proxy war in Syria spreading into Lebanon, if it hasn't already done so?
Well, the bomb that you're referring to, I think, is the 1985 car bombing in the same neighborhood, Bir al-Abed, but that targeted Fadlallah, who is an Ayatollah and is not actually a member of Hezbollah. They follow Khamenei in Iran, but he's often conflated with Hezbollah, even though he's not a member or even really affiliated with them. That was a bomb that killed 80 people and injured 200 civilians, and apparently was the work of the CIA, according to Woodward and a number of other people. It's sort of commonly known that that's the case. In terms of it spilling over from Syria, that's been happening for some time, but Lebanon has its own sectarian issues that precede what's happening in Syria. And now I think what's mostly happening is that the parties to the Syrian conflict, particularly the opposition and their backers, are trying to bring the conflict to Lebanon as sort of another front and pressure on Hezbollah, who are fighting in Syria, on behalf of the Syrian regime. So, yes, there's definitely an attempt, and that's quite overt, because the Syrian opposition, armed opposition, has said that they would bring the war home to Hezbollah, and the southern suburbs would be the place to do that, because that's considered sort of a secure area that Hezbollah controls, and any attacks there, you know, that's sort of a impact on morale would be high.
But the Lebanese civil war went on for some time. It was quite agonizing and incredibly brutal. And in many ways, it appears to have the same kind of, it seems to be the same kind of proxy war in terms of the players back then and now, right, with Saudi Arabia. Hariri, of course, was a Saudi citizen supporting one side and Iran through Hezbollah supporting the other. So are we seeing the same thing in Syria?
Well, I think it's not the same thing, because there is the aspect of it having been a popular uprising against the rule of Bashar al-Assad. But there certainly is a proxy war on top of that, and that is increasingly, you know, there's almost, that's the main conflict in some ways. So it is similar to what happened in Lebanon. The brutality is certainly as extreme, if not more. And, yes, you have some of the same parties, although Qatar, of course, has played a major role in funding some of the armed opposition and being very involved, and they weren't players in the 80s. Their involvement on a regional level is very recent, and they're considered sort of, you know, amateurish almost, given how they've been handling the situation, arming groups that are considered terrorist organizations by the U.S., who are, you know, allies of Qatar, or at least their weapons have been, shipments and funding have been going to those groups, and it hasn't been going very well. So, in fact, now it looks like Saudi Arabia is taking the lead in supporting the Syrian opposition and rebels, and Qatar is sort of stepping back. But it is a very proxy war situation, more than any other current conflict in the region, certainly in the last, you know, since Iraq.
And again, I'm speaking with Emily Dishbecker, who is a Beirut-based freelance writer and editor who has written for Harper's Magazine, Der Spiegel, Die Zeit, and Al Akbar English, among other publications. So given that the Lebanese civil war eventually ended, and it seemed so bleak and so intractable, is there a lesson there for ending this civil war in Syria?
Well, the Lebanese civil war, I don't know if one could say it ever really ended. Certainly there was an end to hostilities, but that was mostly, an external decision. The Saudis decided that they would let the Syrians control Lebanon, and the Syrian army occupied Lebanon for 15 years after the end of the Civil War, and the U.S. was fine with that. They gave the green light in 1990. And Hariri was made prime minister, and he paid off all the warring factions. But Lebanon has not really gotten over that sectarian aspect at all. It's certainly beneath the surface and has been bubbling up in the last few years. And that's also had its proxy elements, because the Saudis fund Hariri and pour a lot of money into the elections in Lebanon, and the Iranians support Hezbollah. So that's sort of, we would hope for Syria that they would not have a Lebanese outcome. They deserve better, surely.
Well, of course, and Hezbollah apparently was behind the bombing of Hariri that killed him. So the beat goes on.
The beat goes on. Well, that is, the trial has not started. We'll see what the evidence
The UN has the evidence, but Hezbollah apparently has a lot of influence in Beirut. So I don't think there's much doubt about who did it. It's just a question of whether you'll ever pin it on the perpetrators in Hezbollah.
I guess it really depends who you ask on that. I mean, I think that a lot of the people in Lebanon don't believe that it was Hezbollah because it was first pinned on Syria. Of course, now Hezbollah's relationship with the Syrian regime is sort of, they're militarily involved in a much more direct way than we've ever seen. So some people think that cast doubt on their relationship 7 years ago or 8 years ago, but Hezbollah were not so close to the Syrian regime always. In fact, they were antagonistic towards them in some aspects. So a lot of people don't believe that Hezbollah killed Hariri because of the back and forth in accusations and leaks and things like that. But we'll have to see what happens.
Well, I did speak to one of the people on the investigation, which is being conducted by the United Nations, and apparently they used metadata from the telephone companies, which is similar to what, of course, Edward Snowden here released in the United States about the NSA's spying on American citizens through this program called PRISM. And it was apparently quite similar in a sense that they got the metadata and they were able to, through algorithms, to trace the calls back to these Hezbollah operatives. So what the man on the street believes, and of course there are all kinds of conspiracy theories throughout the Middle East, is somewhat different from what the evidence might indicate.
Sure. And I think part of the tribunal's purpose in setting it up was to establish some sort of faith in the rule of law, although establish might not be the right word, but to strengthen the Lebanese judiciary and all these things. So the outcome is not only about one guy's murder. There would be a lot of, money and destabilization as a result of it just being a murder investigation. There's a larger aspect and what needs to happen from this that was the main purpose of the tribunal as well. So it does matter what people believe. If people thought that the process had integrity, it would certainly be a different outcome, I think.
So in terms of, obviously, the Lebanese have seen so much bloodshed that they don't want to have a repeat of it, and it seems like the situation next door in Syria, particularly the involvement of Hezbollah in propping up the military side of the Assad regime. And Iran, of course, apparently is helping out as well, and particularly in terms of money and arms. So do you think that somehow, and I don't know how, the Lebanese can avoid being sucked into this thing? I mean, clearly they've seen enough bloodshed. One of the arguments, of course, about this war that's going on in Syria is that at some point or other, the combatants just get exhausted, and that's when there's a chance for peace. And that certainly appeared of what happened in Lebanon as well. There was a certain exhaustion. So I guess two questions there. One is, are the Lebanese people so tired of war that they can sufficiently prevent it from happening again, or is there just too much pressure from outside players in this complicated proxy war next door?
I think you're right that the Lebanese overall do not want a war in Lebanon. And, of course, Hezbollah leader Nasrallah said in one of his speeches, I guess in May, that told the other Lebanese factions, addressing basically his adversaries, said, you know, go fight in Syria, don't fight in Lebanon, which, obviously Syrians would have a problem with that too. But I think that there are efforts to not to contain the violence. There has been fighting in Lebanon continuously in certain parts. In the north, in Tripoli, there's fighting, you know, for the last few years, and that's been quite violent and destabilized. And then there was in the south, 2 weeks ago, there was fighting. There was a number of Lebanese army soldiers killed, and fighters from a Sunni cleric who, is anti-Hezbollah, Sheikh Asir. So there has been fighting, but people are very... do not want to get dragged into it. That's for sure. And I hope that they succeed.
Well, there's a colleague of yours in Beirut, Robert Fisk, who writes for the UK paper The Independent, recently was saying that there were several thousand Iranian troops that had just shown up. And my understanding is that in many ways, the deeper that Hezbollah and Iran get into, and some people have said that Syria could end up like Iran's Vietnam, and that may well be overstated. But do you get the sense that there is a deepening involvement of both Iran and Syria? Because it seems that Hezbollah and Iran and the Russians know what they want. They don't want Assad to fall. On the other side, the Europeans and the Americans and the Saudis and the Qataris seem to, at least on the American side, they seem to know what they don't want, but they don't know what they do want.
I think that's right. I think there is definitely a deepening involvement by the Iranians and by Hezbollah and certainly thousands of fighters from outside Syria. Foreign fighters are fighting on the side of the opposition against the regime. I think that the Iranians know what they want. And I think that one of the reasons that Hezbollah got involved was to show the West that it is more important for them to ensure that the regime survives than it is for the West to overthrow him, and they are willing to put more into that battle than the West is, which does not have a clear strategy, and certainly hasn't been, I would say, entirely successful. The Gulf Arab regimes that are backing the Syrian opposition against Assad's regime have been, doing a number of things to put pressure on Hezbollah, including threatening to expel any Lebanese who support Hezbollah. Obviously, lots of Lebanese, including Shia Lebanese, work in the Gulf and support their families by sending money back home. So there's been a lot of pressure. People have been expelled from the Gulf. Their visas have been revoked. There's been pressure in numerous ways, not only sending fighters and money and everything else. And, of course, there's also been fatwas declared by Sunni clerics who have said that it's a duty to go fight jihad against the Shia and to go fight in Syria. So that's there's been a huge escalation in terms of the stakes on both sides for the Syrian conflict, and we'll really have to see. It's not looking good.
Well, in as much as the U.S. doesn't seem to be certain about what to do, and you've got people like John McCain on the hawkish Republican side saying Obama's not doing enough and that they should have a no-fly zone and lob some cruise missiles at Assad, I would suggest that the people in the region who actually do know what they want are the Israelis. And even though Israel has struck a couple of times against Assad as a warning to Syria not to ship arms to Hezbollah, at least that's the stated purpose behind these strikes. Obviously, the Israelis, on the one hand, don't want, I'm assuming, they're intelligent enough not to want to turn to overtly go after Assad, because that would turn it into an Arab-Israeli war as opposed to a civil war between Syrians against Syrians. And of course, the Assad regime was always argued that the rebels are all tools of America and Israel. So that would play right into their hands. But on the other hand, I imagine there are a bunch of Israeli generals who are still smarting from the inconclusive 2006 war against Hezbollah, who might well be tempted, if Hezbollah is stretched and committed and sucked into a quagmire in Syria. Is that a possible scenario?
I think it's definitely a possible scenario, and I think it's the one real game changer at this point. The wild card is what the Israelis are going to do and what Israeli direct involvement, if they did that, what effect that would have, essentially, both for Hezbollah and how the fighters in Syria, the Syrian opposition fighters, would respond to that. So I really don't know what the result of that would be, but that would certainly, change things in a way that one can't really anticipate what the effect would be. I would also say about McCain and in general the idea of what the U.S.'s policy or strategy is, that there are a number of people in the region who think that, and I think also in the U.S. Government, that particularly who are concerned about Israel's security, that a sort of Iran-Iraq war scenario in Syria where Hezbollah versus, Al-Qaeda and its subsidiaries, various Takfiri groups fighting each other, is not such a bad thing, as long as there's sort of a balance between the two. And where the balance looks to have tipped towards the Syrian regime in the last month and a half, I think that's where you see, it's one reason that the U.S. Has been talking about getting more involved, and they've also mentioned that. They said, well, there needs to be a balance achieved. I think French President Hollande spoke, directly of achieving a balance, so not actually tipping the balance, but, maintaining it. So there's a lot of cynicism about that, because clearly if they wanted to get involved, in a way to end things, there would be a different policy than sending small arms and the stuff that's being considered now.
Well, if that, of course, is the Iran-Iraq war, is of course brings to mind Henry Kissinger's famous statement at the time about the Iran-Iraq war, it's a pity both sides can't lose. So you're suggesting that that may well be the U.S. strategy.
I think that it's a possibility. It certainly would explain how things have been going to some extent. And as I've said, this is something that a lot of people on both sides, ironically, believe, right? I mean, the rebels don't think that the U.S. wants to help them, and nor do the other side. Could they particularly claim that the U.S. has done all it can to support the rebels? So I think that people generally on both sides presume that the destruction of Syria is a given, and that the West won't stop that from happening.
Well, Emily Dish Becker, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
And again, I've been speaking with Emily Dish Becker, who's a Beirut-based freelance writer and editor who has written for Harper's Magazine, Der Spiegel, Die Zeit, and Al Akbar English, among other publications. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producers Claire Goldsmith and Nick Garino. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.